나와시 뷰 디비드네 시대가
拜登向国会寻求增加330亿美元资金援助乌克兰。美国众议院通过轴心法，要求调查中国是否助俄罗斯逃避制裁。美国国务院官员认为，美中合作空间日益缩小。
各位观众大家好，我是卡拉，欢迎收看美国观察。拜登总统寻求增加330亿美元资金援助乌克兰，美国国会众议院通过法案，要求调查中国是否帮助俄罗斯逃避制裁。今天的节目中我们一同关注。 美国总统拜登周四要求国会增加330亿美元的资金，帮助乌克兰抗击俄罗斯入侵。白宫说，这项提案预计可以满足乌克兰5个月的需求，其中200亿用于给乌克兰的军事援助以及提高邻近国家的防卫力量，还有85亿美元的经济援助，帮助泽连斯基政府运作；30亿美元用于食品和人道主义项目。
I just signed a request to Congress for critical security, economic, and humanitarian assistance to help Ukraine continue to counter Putin's aggression and at a very pivotal moment. We need this bill to support Ukraine in this fight for freedom, and our NATO allies, our EU partners, they're going to pay their fair share of the cost as well, but we have to do this. We have to do our part as well, leading the alliance. The cost of this fight it's not cheap, but caving to aggression is going to be more costly if we allow it to happen. The cost as well, but it's critical this funding gets approved and approved as quickly as possible. You know, long before Russia launched its brutal invasion, I made clear how the United States would respond, predicted they would invade, and they surely did. We said we'd not send U.S. troops to fight Russian troops in Ukraine, but we would provide robust military assistance and try to unify the Western world against Russia's aggression. I said I would impose powerful sanctions on Russia and that we destroy this myth that somehow they can continue to move without the rest of the world acting, that we deploy additional forces to defend NATO territories, particularly in the east along the Russian and Belarus borders. That's exactly what we said we would do, and we did. You know, we're not attacking Russia. We're helping Ukraine defend itself against Russian aggression. And just as Putin chose to launch this brutal invasion, he could make the choice to end this brutal invasion. Russia is the aggressor. No ifs, ands, or buts about it. Russia is the aggressor, and the world must and will hold Russia accountable. Russia continues assault is yielding immense human cost. We've seen them leave behind horrifying evidence of their atrocities and war crimes in the areas they try to control. And as long as the assaults and atrocities continue, we're going to continue to supply military assistance. I might know parenthetically. You know, there's a
在一封致国会的信中，拜登总统警告说，如果任由普京继续对乌克兰的侵略，那么代价将是巨大的。 他说，这场战斗的成本很高，但是屈服于侵略的代价将更大。拜登还希望能够从俄罗斯寡头那里取得更多资金，用来支付战争费用。白宫表示，拜登总统的提议将让美国官员得以没收更多寡头的资产，将这些没收的资金交给乌克兰，并进一步将逃避制裁定为犯罪。 提议的步骤包括让司法部使用严格的美国打击黑手党敲诈勒索法，对逃避制裁的人提起诉讼。美国国会众议院通过法案，要求国务院就中国是否对俄罗斯提供任何援助逃避制裁提交评估报告。有关详情，下面连线美国之音记者李毅华为我们介绍。毅华。
项专门针对中国和俄罗斯之间的合作的这个关系来进行调查的法案呢，星期三傍晚是以394票赞成、3票反对的这种压倒性的表决结果通过了众议院。那么法案呢，是直接点名了中国国家主席习近平，要求国务院呢在法案通过30天内来向国会提交一份评估报告，说明这个中国和俄罗斯之间的关系，以及中国是否有对俄罗斯提供任何的实质帮助，以及这个中国是否有帮助俄罗斯来规避国际制裁。那么法案还要求国务院呢，在提交报告之后每90天必须要针对这份报告的内容来进行更新。那么提出法案的共和党联邦众议员巴尔呢，在星期三的院会发言中也特别谈到了中国和俄罗斯的这个合作和关系呢，已经严重威胁到了美国以及美国的盟友。我们来听听巴尔众议员在星期三院会发言怎么说。
Holy alliance between the Chinese Communist Party and the authoritarian oligarchs running the Kremlin is a serious threat to the United States and our allies, and it's enabling this illegal aggression against Ukraine. On February 4th, Russia and the CCP released a joint statement following a meeting with Vladimir Putin and Xi Jinping, outlining a strategic partnership with, quote, no limits. Following Russia's illegal invasion of Ukraine,China refused to condemn Russia's gross violation of international law. China has continued to be silent while Russia targets and kills innocent women, children, and civilians in Ukraine. Instead of condemning Putin's war crimes, the CCP is rewarding them. On February 28th, after the invasion, the CCP struck a massive deal with the Russian energy company Gazprom. Gazprom will deliver 50 billion cubic meters of natural gas per year to the CCP under the agreement. Mr. Speaker, it's time for the United States to confront this new axis of evil head on.
如同刚刚在听到议员所提到，这个俄罗斯呢在发动乌克兰的入侵行动之前呢，曾经在2月初的时候，俄罗斯总统普京曾经到这个北京与中国国家主席习近平进行了会面。那么中俄两国还表示了这个共同的合作，这没有止境，还有没有任何的这个禁区。那么也知道呢，中国迄今为止呢也没有针对俄罗斯的任何的这个入侵行为呢表示公开的谴责。那么国会两党议员呢一直以来是多次的对于中国在这场俄罗斯和乌克兰的战争当中所采取的立场和态度是提出了多次的这个质疑。那么刚刚就像我所提到，这项法案呢是在众议院方面呢是以压倒性的结果通过了众议院。那么两党的议员是对这项法案表示支持。来自这个民主党的众议员呢也在院会当发言当中呢批评了中国在这次的这个乌克兰和的战争当中呢是协助了俄罗斯来进行他们的散播虚假的这个信息活动。我们来继续来听听民主党联邦众议员菲利普斯在院会发言的说法。
While China has tried to distance itself from Russia's war of choice against Ukraine, it has, at best, remained neutral in the face of this violence, demonstrating a woeful abdication of its self-proclaimed role as a responsible stakeholder. Worse, growing signs indicate that China is aligning itself more closely with Russia. Just before Russia's invasion of Ukraine, President Putin and Chairman Xi released a joint statement calling for closer strategic cooperation.While China has publicly denied any foreknowledge of the invasion, it discounted and ignored American intelligence showing Russian buildup around Ukraine. And at no point since the invasion began has China condemned Russia for its invasion, nor for its subsequent human rights atrocities. The PRC has chosen to employ a disinformation campaign to spread harmful narratives about Russia's assault on Ukraine. Both within China and abroad, the PRC is promoting Russian propaganda about the war,and echoing Russia's absurd justifications for the invasion, going so far as accusing the United States for Russia's one-sided aggression.
那么这项法案的提案人呢，巴尔众议员呢，在星期四刚刚稍早的这个一场听证会上呢，也向美国国务卿布林肯来提出要求，称这项法案如果通过了国会之后呢，希望国务院方面能够全力配合法案的内容，来对中国和俄罗斯之间的合作进行调查。那么布林肯国务卿呢，也对此给予了这个正面的这个肯定的答复。那么这个法案呢，在通过了众议院之后呢，接下来还将送交到这个参议院来进行审议，通过两院之后才会正式的这个送到白宫，由拜登总统来签署。生效。以上是记者所掌握到的有关情况，时间交还给主持人卡拉。
好的，感谢易华带来的详细报道。 美国国务卿布林肯的高级顾问德里克·乔莱特星期四接受美国之音的专访。乔莱特说，美中可以合作的空间在俄罗斯军事入侵乌克兰之后越来越小。乔莱特并未透露布林肯国务卿何时将发表对华政策演说。下面我们连线美国之音驻国务院记者站主任张荣香来了解详情。荣香，首先给我们介绍一下，这个乔莱特他在和你的专访之中就俄罗斯军事入侵乌克兰之后中国的角色做了怎样的说明。
我们也先来说说一些新的发展，就是在俄罗斯对乌克兰军事入侵之后呢，进入两个多月，那么这个星期联合国秘书长古特雷斯分别和俄罗斯总统普京以及乌克兰总统泽连斯基进行了会晤。美国国务卿布林肯和古特雷斯保持了密切联系。那么布林肯的高级顾问乔拉特告诉美国之音，美国并不认为普京是真的愿意进行和谈的。那么另一方面，布林肯国务卿曾经表示，美国并没有看到中国对俄罗斯提供武器。针对美国之音记者询问，在美国政府呢宣布种种的制裁措施之后呢，一些外国企业包括了欧洲以及中国企业是否会由于某些的商业行为而遭到波及，也就是所谓的二级制裁。对此乔拉特表示呢，如果有任何人任何公司呢是企图来逃避这个美国所宣布所针对俄罗斯寡头俄罗斯政府所进行的制裁措施，那么将会付出代价。接下来我们来看看乔斯特是怎么说的。
Well, the United States has been very clear, President Biden in his conversations with President Xi, Secretary Blinken in his conversations with Chinese Foreign Minister, that China will pay a price if it is seen as assisting Russia, either providing it direct assistance, particularly military assistance, or assisting Russia in evading its sanctions. China knows very well the economic consequences that it could face if it's seen as helping Russia. And China itself is suffering because of the sanctions we have placed on Russia. And so we are hoping that the Chinese make the decision not to support Russia. They, of course, have talked about a relationship, the U.S.-China or the China-Russia relationship is one that says, quote-unquote, no limits. That was the language of the joint statement that they released prior to the Olympics. But we're very watchful of what China is doing and made very clear to them the consequences of their actions if they choose to provide that kind of support to Russia.
是荣先，我们知道本周美国国务卿布林肯是告诉美国国会议员说，他计划在不久的将来要详细的阐述美国的对华政策。那么乔莱特对此有什么说明吗？
布林肯国务卿什么时候发表对华政策演说是许多人所密切关注的。那么针对美国之音记者询问，这个时间点呢是在美国和东盟举行特别峰会，也就是在五月中旬之前还是之后举行。对此乔拉特表示呢，这个时间点呢是在未来几个星期之内，因为这是美国国务卿布林肯的重点目标之一。那么乔拉特还表示呢，随着俄罗斯入侵乌克兰之后呢，美中之间可以合作的空间呢也日益缩小。接下来我们来看看他怎么说。
Well, the U.S.-China relationship is a very complicated relationship. There are elements of it that are conflictual, clearly, where areas where the U.S. and China are going to fundamentally disagree. There are areas of that relationship that are competitive, and the United States welcomes the competition with China as long as we are playing by the same set of rules. And there are areas of the relationship that we think by necessity have to be cooperative. For example, on an issue like climate change, where we are not going to be able to address the consequences of a warming climate if the United States and China can't find a way to work together. Unfortunately, that's a dwindling space in terms of the cooperation space.
记者荣香的连线报道。乌克兰总统泽连斯基星期四与到访的联合国秘书长古特雷斯举行了会谈。古特雷斯希望扩大人道援助，并确保平民从冲突地区撤离。他稍早前与俄罗斯总统普京和俄罗斯外长拉夫罗夫也讨论了这一问题。联合国星期三表示，在莫斯科和基辅都派有工作组，贯彻执行古特雷斯与普京原则上达成的协议，让联合国和国际红十字会帮助撤离被困在被围攻的港城马里乌波尔的亚速钢铁厂内的平民。与此同时，乌克兰总统的顾问波多利亚克说，俄罗斯关键的能源产品被欧洲国家禁运只是时间问题。 美国五角大楼发言人科比说，美国源源不断的武器和物资的供应帮助乌克兰成功地抵抗了俄罗斯的侵略行动。乌克兰方面周四表示，俄罗斯军队加大了在乌克兰东部和南部的攻击。俄罗斯总统普京扬言要对干预乌克兰战争的西方国家实施闪电式的报复行动。在持续两个多月的战争中，俄军并未实现占领乌克兰首都基辅的目标，于是俄军把攻击目标转向了乌克兰东部，攻击最激烈的地点在顿涅茨克和哈尔科夫两个城市附近。乌军总参谋部表示，在过去的24小时里，乌克兰部队击退了俄军在顿巴斯地区发动的6次进攻。控制顿巴斯是莫斯科入侵战争的主要目标之一。哈尔科夫地区负责人表示，俄军正在加强195的攻击力量，但乌克兰军队仍然坚守着自己的阵地。美国等40多个国家本周在德国开会，决定给乌克兰提供重型武器。普京说，如果有人决议要从外部进行干预，对俄罗斯进行战略威胁是不可接受的。台湾、乌克兰跟60多个国家参加拜登政府推出的未来网络宣言，强调网络不应集中管理，应倡议人权与基本自由，保障个人福祉，所有人都能上网。白宫国安会官员在背景简报会上指出，中国与俄罗斯推动的是分裂网，政府不应非法用网络监控人民或任意断网。而面对中国通过推广硬件基础设施来控制网络，官员说，美国一直与华为等公司竞争。美国白宫国家安全顾问沙利文28日通过视讯与全球签署宣言国家共同宣布未来网络宣言。
Every day we see headlines on digital tools being used to repress freedom of expression, to deny other fundamental human rights and fundamental freedoms. And we face every day a rising tide of disinformation that sows division and conflict and hate around the world.
乌克兰代表在致辞中提及，卫星照片显示布查有大量的平民被杀害，但是俄罗斯媒体却掩盖事实，这彰显网络自由的重要性。台湾数位政委唐凤也参加宣言发表会，这份宣言提出了包括保护人权和推动信息自由流通等5项政治承诺。俄乌战争2个月以来，俄军想要迅速攻克乌克兰主要城市的目标以失败告终。乌克兰也获得了越来越多的国际社会的支持。实地探访了战争前线的美国前海军陆战队员埃略特·阿克曼认为，俄军僵化的中央集权式指挥模式、反装甲武器的优越性以及乌军的顽强决心，使得乌克兰正在赢得这场战争。
Russian forces have largely failed in their first aim to take the largest cities. As a former intelligence officer, do you believe Russia's thought advance was partly because of Putin's intelligence failure or miscalculation?
This Russian intelligence failure is a huge part of why the Russian army has had such a difficult time in Ukraine. The Russians fundamentally underestimated the Ukrainians, did not understand the depth and passion of Ukrainian resolve, these people's desire to live in their own free, independent country. And it would seem there was an assumption on the part of the Russians that they would be able to inspire divisions in Ukraine and so divided, be able to at least annex a good chunk of the country, if not the whole country. And that is just absolutely not proven the case. The very big story here is the resolve of the Ukrainians.
You once compared the centralized command and control used by the Russian military and the decentralized mission-style command and control used by the Ukrainian forces. Would you please elaborate on this? How does it play out in the fact that Russia had such a difficult time gaining ground?
At a fundamental level, the Russian army and the Western NATO armies have very different philosophies in how they wage war. And this goes all the way back decades, if not centuries, Soviet times and before. In so much as Western militaries rely on what are called mission style tactics, meaning everyone from a 22-year-old corporal up to a general.Understands deeply the mission, why they're there, what they're trying to achieve. And the reason for that is that when command and control breaks down, when in the chaos of war, if everyone understands the mission, even if the plan isn't working and nothing is going according to plan, and even if people can't talk, if everyone understands the mission, they can adapt to get the mission done, to complete the mission. So that's mission style tactics. You know, the Russians have a very centralized command structure where all decision making is made in one place, where plans are very tightly orchestrated and choreographed. And that can work well if everything is going according to plan. But the weakness of that system is that when things don't go according to plan, the junior soldiers don't have a good idea of why they're there, what their mission is. And you quickly see chaos develop when you have that centralized planning structure, as we've seen in Ukraine. And I think a great example of this was, if we remember early on after the Russian invasion, there was a 40-mile long convoy leading down to Kyiv. And that convoy that was 40 miles sitting there was really a traffic jam. And there was a breakdown amongst the Russian command and control when things didn't go according to plan, where none of these vehicles knew what they were supposed to do. And so we're really seeing in Ukraine today two diametrically opposed philosophies of warfare engaging with one another. And the Ukrainians, with their mission-style tactics, are doing far, far better than the Russians.
Given that, if the fight descended into a guerrilla war, as some analysts predict, will it give Ukraine a greater edge?
I'm very skeptical that it will devolve into a guerrilla war. I think one of the challenges that we're having in the West right now is we perpetually keep underestimating the Ukrainians and overestimating the Russians. And we seem very reluctant, despite a month of continual battlefield successes, to just say what is glaringly obvious. The Ukrainians are winning this war. And so far, it appears that they're winning it pretty handily. If you know, they'll still need support from the West in terms of weapons and materiel to keep pressure on the Russians. But they have certainly shown themselves more capable of fighters than the Russians. In the event, which I believe is unlikely, that this would sort of have to devolve into a guerrilla-style war, I think you would see the Ukrainians as highly effective guerrilla fighters.
How do you see the role played by anti-armor weapons in the Ukraine-Russia war, particularly the American-made weapons like Javelin?
Well, we're seeing for the first time the wide-scale deployment of some of these new generation anti-tank missiles like the Javelin or the British-made NLAW. And they're incredibly effective against the latest generation tanks. And that is something new. In the past, maybe 15 or even 20 years ago, the latest generation tanks, by and large, their armor was effective enough to protect them from anti-tank weapons. These new anti-tank weapons, that's not the case. And that's why we're seeing time after time Russian tanks, very advanced Russian tanks, being destroyed by small groups of two or three Ukrainians. And that is that's an important trend in this war that everyone should pay attention to. The Russians should pay attention to it, but the United States and NATO should be paying attention to it as well, because particularly in the West, we have what I would call a very platform-centric view of warfare, meaning we tend to invest very heavily in these extremely expensive platforms like technologically advanced battle tanks or ships or aircraft. And what we're seeing is that anti-platform weapons now have the capacity to destroy these very expensive, very advanced platform systems.
So you think the superiority of anti-armor weapons displayed in this war could change warfare tactics in future wars?
I think it could certainly change the balance of power, because it's not just anti-tank missiles that we're seeing the effectiveness of. You know, it's also anti-ship missiles. And so if a military is completely invested in its platforms, while at the same time the anti-platform technologies like these missiles become extremely advanced, you could very quickly see one military that's perceived to be weaker become the stronger. And in many respects, that's what we've seen in Ukraine. You know, the Ukrainians do not have many tanks, yet they're defeating Russian tanks. And it's not with their own tanks, it's with these Javelin missiles. So that's an important, I think that's an important trend to be paying attention to.
Sure. As you point out, the anti-armor weapons have proved to be able to turn the tide for an outmatched military. Is it applicable to possible conflicts in some other places, like in the South China Sea or across Taiwan Strait?
I think it certainly is. It's that same idea of the ascendance of anti-platform weapon systems. So, for instance, shore-based missiles we're seeing have now extended ranges and extended lethality. So in any type of naval clash, like one you could imagine seeing in the South China Sea, it would show that there would be an increased level of vulnerability to large groups of capital ships like aircraft carriers and destroyers. So it's an important trend, again, for, you know, not only the Chinese military, but also the American military to watch as they're making decisions on how to invest their resources.
As a former Marine who served five tours in Iraq and Afghanistan, has the Ukraine-Russia war refreshed or changed your view on war?
Well, I think one of the things that I have observed is that the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan frequently were complex morally. The Iraq war was fought on faulty premises. The Afghan war dragged on for years and years. And oftentimes, what we were doing there didn't seem particularly clear. That is not the case in Ukraine. In Ukraine, the stakes are very clear. There is very clearly one side that is in the right here, the Ukrainians, and another side that is the aggressor and in the wrong, and that is the Russians. And so I've been engaged with war for 20 years. This is the fourth war that I've been to. I also covered Syria as a journalist, and it's the most clear-cut war that I have seen in terms of which side we should all be on and who we should all be supporting, and that is the side of the Ukrainians.
All right. Thank you very much, Mr. Ackerman.
美国贸易代表办公室在星期三发表的有关知识产权保护和执法的特别301报告中，继续把中国列入优先观察名单，原因是对中国去年颁布的专利、版权和刑法修正案的有效性感到担忧。 报道说，美国正密切关注中国实施美中第一阶段贸易协议的进展。美国对知识产权盗窃和强迫将美国技术转让给中国竞争对手，以获得市场准入的关切，是特朗普政府对数千亿美元中国进口商品征收301条款关税的核心。拜登政府目前保留了这些关税。 美国众议院星期三一致通过议案，要求国务院提交一项计划，帮助台湾恢复世界卫生组织的观察员地位。议案以425票比0票通过，并送交白宫。该议案去年8月份已经在参议院过关。法案要求美国国务卿制定一个让台湾在世界卫生大会获得观察员地位的战略。 台湾2017年被剥夺了这个地位，由于中国反对，台湾被排除在世界卫生组织等国际组织之外。 位于美国首都华盛顿郊区、占地16万平方英尺的高耸的白色摩门教圣殿，建于1974年。通常只有耶稣基督后期圣徒教会及摩门教的成员才能拜访。经过装修之后的摩门圣殿将在近50年来首次开放，公众开放日于4月28号开始。
This temple was constructed in the late 1960s, early 1970s, dedicated in 1974. So it's almost 50 years old, time for a renovation and a refreshing of the interior of the temple. Here in Washington, D.C., this particular temple is very striking as you drive on the beltway around the city. And people have seen it for decades, but they have no idea what it is or what takes place. We think it's a good idea to invite them to just come. The interest that has been indicated by so many people is very vast. So we'll see, but it will be hundreds and hundreds of thousands of people.
People feel like what we do inside is secret, but as you saw today, it's just sacred. It's very sacred for us. So with every temple that we construct or renovate, we always have an open house, every single time.
And just to be clear, it's not that we keep people out of the temple, but it's just that it takes a special journey to be able to come in. And this is a journey of